To another episode of Pod Nuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming at you live, as in live on video tonight. I am here with Robin Livesay from Uplevel Systems, and we are going to be doing a live podcast and demo of their product, and we're going to have a good old time. So I'm down in Florida. Robin is over in Texas. And I just had to go run and turn the air on because it is hot. And Robin, hello. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Man, I look goofy with my glasses on.
That is A-okay.
All right.
You don't get weird.
So as we get started, we're obviously going to have a nice time here diving into your product. But why don't we simply start by you introducing yourself and Uplevel Systems.
Yeah. So as Marvin said, my name's Robin Livesay. I'm the director of marketing over at Uplevel. Uplevel is a networking infrastructure company. We are really going after enabling MSPs to scale their systems, their customers. And certainly in a time like this, enabling MSPs to remotely manage and configure systems. So obviously we're not going to get very far into any sort of podcast or broadcasting without mentioning the absolute mayhem that's happening in the world, called the coronavirus, in case this airs later on. And certainly what our MSPs are seeing in the field as a result. So we feel very fortunate in the sense that all of our MSPs are okay, first and foremost. Everyone is healthy, but they're actually up and running at the moment and able to help customers because of the system. So I'm sure we'll get into more of that here in a second.
All right, good. So a lot of my customers, well, all but one stubborn one, are actually good to go with their remote access, and they're operating just fine. I guess the big thing is most of them are used to operating under hurricane protocols. So they're using those same things where they've kind of prepared for this and kind of waited around, and now that the governor gave the issue yesterday that, you know, non-essential businesses, you know, need to shut down, they're pretty much ready. Again, one stubborn customer. So I know that out in Texas, now your MSPs are all over the country and the world, but in terms of your operation there, did you have a lot of the same things in terms of preparing for this?
Yeah. So it's funny, you know, amidst all of this, we often talk about disaster recovery, like you mentioned. Hurricanes, tornadoes are a big one in Texas. And our corporate offices are actually in Portland, so they get more earthquake-type disaster preparedness. Fires are a big one down here in Texas. But we often forget about disasters can look something to the unnatural state, right? Where it may not be a natural disaster where everyone is shut down, but sometimes businesses have to come to a complete halt for other reasons. Pandemics aren't usually on the list. It's not something that we hope to see in the next 100 years, expect to see in the next 20, certainly. But it's a really good reminder of, in the event that business can't operate as usual, a plan needs to be in place. Now, that can look like a business owner having a family emergency, having to go out of the country for many weeks, having to not work, right? So it's important to have plans in place where you don't necessarily operate as normal is probably the best way to say that. You have to have a second mode of operation during times of uncertainty, or certainly times like this. But we've seen our MSPs kind of weather fairly well, actually, because, you know, they're very much in the tune of disaster recovery and knowing what to do there. So to your point, a lot of people are operating kind of like there were a hurricane or a tornado, and things can't run normally.
All right. Now, I know we're probably going to go off track with how you want to do the demo today, but one of the things that now I've had my unit about a month. Does that sound right?
Yeah, something maybe to that too.
Okay.
A month and a half.
And one of the first things that I looked at was the VPN setup. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be something that's very easy to do. And in light of what's going on now, I'm sure that a lot of your MSPs were able to implement this very quickly with getting people set up remotely. So why don't we start with that?
Yeah. So VPNs are a huge part of what we do every day, pandemics aside. So they are incredibly easy to set up. And now might be actually a perfect time for me to go ahead and share my screen.
Oh, go right while ahead. We're at it.
So this is the dashboard in case you're not familiar with us. This is what it looks like to just have a normal dashboard with all of your customers here. And then I can click on any of these customer sites, click configure, and go into VPN. And you can set up a remote access VPN at any time just by going in and adding a new username and password here. Just by typing this in, username, password as you need it, and then click save. And that'll give you access or create a new user into the VPN that you can then use to access the gateway. All the information that you need is actually on this screen here. So you can see the server IP address that will never change regardless of what the public IP address of the gateway is. It will never, ever change. You also don't need a static IP to run any of the services ever on the gateway. So you can see all of that here. And then as far as configuration of the client goes, it's very easy. You really have two options. You can either download a soft Ether client that we recommend, as well as other software clients that you can install. Soft Ether is just who we recommend on a regular basis. Or you can use the built-in client for either Windows or Macs. As you'll notice, I'm actually on a Mac. I don't know if you can actually see my full screen, but I'm on a Mac. And I can set up the VPN client super easily just by going into the built-in client here, typing in all this information. So the server IP address, the pre-shared key, and then the username and password that I set up, clicking save, and it'll automatically put you on the LAN side of the gateway, just like you were in the office. From there, you can move around, access any resources that you need directly from there. So for MSPs that are setting up clients remotely right now, this is very easy to do. And then they send them off with maybe a couple of instructions on how the end customer, the small business, can set it up on their machine, or they just remote directly into the machine and do it for them.
Beautiful. So obviously Windows and Mac, so that takes away the software side where some firewall clients actually only work on Windows.
Exactly.
Or you have to do the RDP app in the Mac. I set some up. I had a customer that they're using the firewall, and we installed the client, and they actually had to go out and purchase the parallel software for the Mac so that they could use remote desktop. They had to install the parallels in order to install the VPN client so that they could then remote in. So
yeah, it takes all of that out of it. And if there are clients that don't want to download a new piece of software or, whatever the case may be, right? Maybe it's an older machine, it's not compatible. All of a sudden, it takes all of those out. As long as it's got a built-in client, we will work. Same goes with iPhones and Androids. It'll actually work on those built-in clients as well.
Okay, so it's not software specific at all. You don't have to have a specific client for Uplevel. You can use a lot of the free VPN client softwares out there.
Exactly.
All right, beautiful. Okay.
Very easy.
So now let's take a step back and talk about the appliance itself, because in a sense, this is an all-in-one appliance. So it is your firewall / router / you can attach the Wi-Fi access points to it. You can do NAS storage with it. You can do directory services with it. You can configure VoIP. There's a lot of stuff you can do with this appliance, and I made the mistake. I'll apologize up front. You and I had the conversation earlier. I assume that this would be for small clients only, but this can handle enterprise type stuff.
Yeah. So small is relative, right? We certainly don't intend on addressing the 1,000-person company. That's a much different appliance as far as performance goes. But small meaning up to 100, yeah, absolutely. This can handle the appliance itself has a very, very rugged processor in it. It can handle a lot of connections and traffic at any point. And like you said, there are a lot of different services built into it. So the unique part about our gateway, like you mentioned, there's a firewall, there's a router, there's all kinds of features you can actually see here in this left-hand pane automatically built into the gateway itself. But on top of that, we combine that with a cloud controller to actually enable MSPs to easily configure, monitor, and manage the gateway. Now, this sounds fairly rudimentary and basic, but it actually comes with several benefits. So the cloud controller is constantly talking to the gateway on-prem. And most importantly, the gateway on-prem is reporting up to the cloud. So because of that, it's always reporting its public IP address. The gateway can sit behind a NATed modem the same way that it would work behind a bypass modem. It'll work the exact same way, which is incredibly important right now for setting up remote users that are working from home. If a user wasn't necessarily set up to work from home when all of this struck, we have several MSPs that are actually going in, configuring a gateway remotely, drop shipping it directly to the customer, right? So they're configuring it while it's on the UPS truck, and then just telling the customer to plug it into their internet service provider. And because the gateway works the exact same way behind a NATed modem, it punches through that firewall and connects up to the cloud. There's no ISP you have to call. There's no conversation to get a static IP. And then what if the static IP information is wrong? All of that goes away. So now all of a sudden you have a very easy dropship appliance that'll fit directly into the customer's home, or whatever the case may be, right? Pandemics aside from all of this.
I'll tell you, in my office here, so I've got my firewall set up and I can't disconnect it because I also have a VoIP appliance in there. And so the VoIP is first, then my firewall. Then I have the up-level appliance, and because I was testing, I just said, I'll just set it up and I'll play with it. And it does all of that stuff double NATed. So
yeah,
it works.
Double, triple. We'll work the exact same way. And like I said, right now, that's really important. The VPNs, most importantly, work the exact same way behind that double NATed scenario that you mentioned. It'll work the exact same way behind a single NAT. Now, obviously, for performance reasons, we recommend placing them behind bypass modems as opposed to a NATed modem because you reduce the latency. There's all kinds of stuff, right, that come along with double NATs. But in times like this, where performance is kind of a nice to have and getting up and running is the must have at the moment, that's really important. Now, on top of that, the gateway, like you mentioned, has a bunch of different services, but because there's a software overlay, you can actually go in and enable or disable any of those services as you need. The gateway configuration will always be pulled down from the cloud whenever it boots up. And like I mentioned, you can configure it while it's offline. As soon as it's plugged in, it'll pull down that configuration. But most importantly, the gateway is also pushing up a ton of information to the cloud. And in the event that there is ever a fire or a hurricane and the physical hardware dies, there's a VM sitting in the cloud with all of those configurations and all of that data still living on it. So you just point the previous VM to a new piece of hardware. You don't have to worry about downloading config files, making sure they're up to date, any of that. The VM is always up to date because as long as the gateway is online, it's always reporting up. So that's really important as well.
All right.
So
where do you want to go next?
So we can jump into some actual features here. So I'll go back to the main dashboard here. This is the single pane of glass where any MSP can see all of their customers.
Okay, I'm sorry. I want to stop you there and say how awesome that is to be able to go into your place and see all of your customers in one spot. Because others that I've played with, looked at, you have to log out, go to another place.
Yeah.
And it's cumbersome. So being able to see everybody in one spot, very nice.
Yeah. And another thing about the dashboard is we've actually specifically designed both the hardware and the dashboard for MSPs. So we're 100% channel based. We don't ever sell direct to customers. And we've really designed it to make sure that MSPs can be successful in their business and managing their customers and deploying quickly. Most often what we see with small businesses in the MSP world is the ability to actually make small businesses profitable for the MSP. They say they often spend a lot of time on the smallest of customers, just based on calls and workload. And often those small customers can't afford to upgrade hardware. So there's this weird gap that sits there, where they need a managed service provider because they certainly can't afford an on staff IT person. But they also don't really want to upgrade the equipment. And so being able to bridge that gap with a subscription-based piece of hardware and making sure that MSPs can remotely configure it to reduce time, make those configurations easy so that they can do it from anywhere, and then bring profitability back to those customers that may or may not have, that MSPs probably actually would have walked away from, is really important. So there's that.
Okay. Didn't mean to interrupt, but go right in.
No, not at all. So like I said, this is the dashboard here, and you can see all of your customers. And if you click on any of those customers, you'll see all of the office locations. So for instance, this Robin Tech Systems, these are obviously very bad names, but this Benton CPA is probably more appropriate, right, of what a customer name might look like. You can see all those different office locations. So for instance, this might be a firm that has, you know, three office locations. Just for a point of reference, this Robin's apartment here is in the state of Texas. These two up here are actually in Oregon. So three very physically different locations across the nation. And you can see how all of the different services are running on each of those office locations. Now, you'll notice that there's a bit of a warning here saying that there are two issues that were previously observed. At any point, I can click on those and see what was going on. So about 25 minutes ago, I upgraded a gateway. So you'll see the upgrade completed. And then about the same time, there was an ISP hiccup, meaning the gateway wasn't able to push out a hello up to the cloud. The cloud missed a hello. It reports that the ISP link is unstable. So you'll see that there. Anytime that there's any sort of weirdness going on, you'll get alerts. But if I close it out, you'll notice that everything's back to normal. So the issue has since resolved itself. Really important for being able to really quickly at a glance see what's going on in the customer's network. And then obviously all of those different issues and warnings push out in proactive email notifications as well to partners.
All right. Now, and all the checks are green. So that, does that mean that if there's something wrong, screen is going to show either yellow or red?
Yeah, funny that you mention it. So obviously, all of these gateways are currently offline. So most importantly, that's a failure. So it turns red. Any warnings will turn yellow. And you'll see if it's a specific service that's having issues, let's say a backup fails, it'll just be that specific failure that you'll see here. Oh, there are none there. Let's see if I can find one. Well, let's go to Wi-Fi. So you'll see, nope, not there either. Let's see. Well, this would be a perfect time if I had some pre-canned, other ones, but we've already run through my few pre-canned, so we'll stop there. But you'll see, yeah, all of those issues bubble up to the top. All the other services on the gateway since it's offline have gone away because nothing is running on the gateway at the moment. It is offline, and you'll see if there were specific issues, you would see them appear here in those services. As you need. All of that makes sense.
Okay. So you did mention the fact that the appliance does detect and alert to issues such as, you know, unstable connections. Certainly a good thing if you've got a crappy ISP that you're dealing with, that you can tell the customer, look, it's your IP, it's not your network. So what other types of like robust firewall features are in there?
Yeah, there are a bunch. So we obviously send out monthly reports of all the pertinent information that's gone on over the month. Those reports go out either on the first or whenever you want to generate them. So that's a really important feature as well. But if you click on configure, you'll actually see that under each firewall, there's a diagnostics tab here. You can click on that and then run any tests that you need directly from the gateway. So I can come in and actually, let's say, for instance, the customer is complaining of issues. You can run a long-term bandwidth test for up to a week to actually see what the ISP is doing over the long term. It'll produce a graph. Let's see if I actually have one here. Oh, yeah. You can see this is a quick bandwidth test. So it just ran for about a minute. But you'll see what the ISP was doing over that minute. And it looks like this was a very steady eddy 94, 93 up and down speed. So it's really great for troubleshooting issues like that when a customer just says things aren't working well. First things first, check the ISP. You can also do things like ping specific IP addresses. That can be either a domain name or an IP address on the LAN or the WAN, where you can see if there are any issues. For things like inability to connect to servers, or specific websites not being reachable, this is a really good first step to see if you can ping them directly from the gateway without having to do a truck roll all the way to troubleshoot an issue.
All right. And in terms of things like stateful packet inspection, those types of advanced features, what's in there for us?
Yeah. So the firewall itself has really what I would call four main features. There's obviously a stateful port blocking firewall where it'll block all unsolicited traffic. That's going to be this port blocking tab up here where you can come in. And if you click to add a firewall rule, you're actually going to create a port forwarding rule. So that'll punch a hole through that firewall. By default, all inbound traffic is automatically blocked. And if I go back to that statistics tab, I can see how many packets were actually coming in and what country codes and what port numbers they're trying to come in on the WAN side. So that's number one. The second is going to be this threat analysis tab. This is actually going to be the IPS IDS, or Deep Packet Inspection Firewall, where we're inspecting both inbound and outbound traffic for malicious content. You'll see here that there's actually an alert of destination unreachable is the attack profile. And you can see if I click on the three dots, the IP address that it went from, where it came to, and then how many packets were sent and at what time. This is a really good indicator of if this should be happening or not. And then from there, I can go ahead and decide how to deal with it moving forward. So either I can block that specific attack profile, I can block it all communication from that specific IP address, I can go in and allow it, right? All those different things. This is obviously a private IP address, so it's not really that that worrisome. But if it were, I could do so as well.
Okay. So that's neat that you can actually configure on the fly as you get the threat.
Yeah, as you get the threat, and you can actually configure it to alert you in the when they actually occur. So you can do so immediately, daily or weekly in addition. That way it's you don't by default have to get them, because for some customers that would be a lot. So we actually allow you to configure that separately, the email addresses, in the event that you want to see exactly what's going on the network when, and then when things do occur, go in and address them immediately and remotely, as you need.
Okay. Let me do one quick thing, because I realize that I'm asking a lot of the questions and kind of taking you all over the place. But for the people that are joining us live in the Zoom webinar, the Q&A is active. So if you want to ask a question as we're going through, be sure to put your question in there. I will try to pay attention and make sure that we get it asked and answered. If you're watching on the Facebook, you can ask, but we may not answer. So I would encourage everybody to jump on the Zoom webinar and participate that way. And we'll try to answer as many questions as we can. So,
and we can always answer them after the fact.
Yes,
as well.
We can.
Send out answers however we need.
All right. So I want to make sure. So we've got obviously the port blocking. You've got domain filtering there, country tab as well. So if we want to block China, which if you're not blocking China, so something's wrong with you.
Yeah, right. And back to the statistics page, this is always really fascinating, right? You'll notice number two is Russia. That's not a good sign, right?
Nope.
So if you're not blocking, at least using this to see who is attempting to get in, Malaysia is a little surprising to me, as well as Italy. But we've actually seen an uptick in attacks during the pandemic, believe it or not. So it's not uncommon for in times like this, especially whenever there's any sort of political fodder going on with specific countries, to all of a sudden get an uptick in malicious attacks that happen across the nation, just unsolicited and or solicited. So keep that in mind. Obviously, okay. Everyone's heard that the COVID-19 keyword is now being used in all kinds of ransomware attacks.
So, yeah. And of course, we were warned to not start podcast using COVID-19 as the name of your podcast.
Right. I mean, unfortunately, that's people preying on kind of a really intense event that's going on around the world right now. Right. But it is something that really people are vulnerable to. Anything that has that title is catching people's attention right now.
So. All right. So yeah. I see you clicked on the domain filtering tab. And as I was playing with this, I noticed that you've got a little bit different approach to filtering, whereas a lot of places you're just filtering either by category or you can whitelist or blacklist by domain only, but you've got all of that in one place where not only do you have the filtering, but this key section. I mean, just go ahead and show us all that.
Okay, yeah. So first of all, you can block entire categories, which is important. No one wants to have to look up every domain name of a category that they don't like. So you can just use these pre-filled categories to select them. Very straightforward, very easy. Click save. You're ready to go. And like you mentioned, you can also blacklist and whitelist. So if there are additional domains that you want to block on top of those categories or in addition to, you can do so just by separating them by comma. If it is a main domain, any subdomains will also be blocked along with it. So that's there. And then the whitelisting will create exceptions. So for instance, if you have a category blocked like gaming, and you want to allow a specific domain name out of that gaming category, you can do so. Or if you're seeing any issues, we constantly see this with domain names that might be selected as a part of a category that aren't exactly obvious. What's a good example? There was a credit card processor that was had a secondary domain name that was actually specified as online ads because they had several ads on their website, right? So weird things like that that may not be incredibly obvious. You can always go in if there are ever any issues and allow those domains, which create exceptions to both of the blocking and the blocked categories option there. Now, if you scroll down towards the middle, you'll see this keys option. The keys allows you to create either one-time or permanent exceptions to those rules. So let's say, for instance, my favorite example is actually interns that you hire for the summer, right? Probably college students or someone fairly young, maybe even in high school. And you obviously don't want them getting on social media or Facebook during the summer because they're supposed to be working. Well, give it a couple of weeks and now all of a sudden you decide that you want to have a Facebook page and you need someone to manage that Facebook page and you turn to the high school student there because they are the most qualified. That might be an exception where you want to come in and say, okay, I want you to do Facebook the next week. So I'm going to create a temporary access key to go in and allow you access into Facebook for the next week. This will be valid until 3/29, which is about a week from now. Or you can go in and create a permanent access key where you can actually self enter a key here and click save. And that'll always allow whoever has that key access in. So that's really important if there are specific people that need access to specific resources, either temporarily or permanently.
And that key works in the fashion that if they go to that page, it's going to ask them for the key to get access.
Exactly. So depending on the caching of the browser, it'll either save the key or if caching is turned off, okay, it'll obviously ask for it every time. And then if the key ever expires, then all of a sudden you get the denied page again.
Okay.
You have to have anyone. Yeah.
All right. Exactly. And then you have filter groups down there.
Yeah. So this is actually going into a larger security groups posture that we have in the gateway, which I can talk about here in a second. But you'll see here, you can go in and segregate out who the filter groups apply to and who they don't. This is really important. Let's say, for instance, if you want to filter guests and maybe employees, but the boss decides that he wants access into all websites all the time. Please don't filter me.
Yes.
Yeah, which often happens. So we always want to remind people that bosses aren't immune to any sort of bad traffic in the world, so be mindful. But you can go in and specify which groups it applies to and which it doesn't. So before I get into groups really fast, I'm actually going to talk about country filtering just while we're here. You can see all of the different options to block either specific countries or entire regions if you need, just by specifying what names there are, separated by commas. So Iran's another popular one right now. Click save. And that blocking is actually down to the ping level. It is a no mercy, no traffic accepted, nothing allowed, all access denied block. I say that very mindfully because we often see events happen where customers think it's actually a networking issue because they can't get out. And so it often gets diagnosed as some sort of issue somewhere in the network, either in cables or who knows where, right? You start troubleshooting it like it were a networking issue,
right,
only to realize it is a true block. So my favorite example is Facebook has a lot of servers actually located in Ireland. Ireland's not necessarily a country that you may want to block, but if you have a security posture where you're blocking all traffic except for Canada and the US, all of a sudden Ireland's no longer on that list. So users trying to troubleshoot will often try to go to Facebook, right? Or Google, only to realize that they can't get there. So they think something is wrong.
Right.
Same goes with a lot of other countries. There are a lot of companies that are using server banks elsewhere now. And it's not malicious by any means, but it's certainly something to keep in mind.
All right. Yep, we've had that happen. I've had some attorneys that all of a sudden couldn't get to something because the one server, for some reason, cached overseas,
yeah,
even though the bulk of the servers might be here in the U.S. So that does happen.
Yeah, and like I said, it's a no mercy. So all of a sudden, it looks like a much deeper issue, right? You're looking for all kinds of crazy firewall rules or
No, we're not. We're calling the ISP and saying something's wrong with your DNS.
Right. It gets diagnosed as a DNS issue. You start rebooting switches all of a sudden. So it turns into a much bigger ordeal other than just going in and realizing that that server IP address is in a blocked country.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So now is probably a pretty good time to actually talk about security groups. So in the up-level gateway, you have the ability to go in and enable multiple groups down at the bottom and click yes. That'll allow you to create additional VLANs. And you can call these VLANs whatever you'd like, right? You can call it, I'm going to be very creative, VLAN 3, for instance. And click save, and it'll automatically create that VLAN and subnet off the bat. And that's where those groups are coming in. Those are back to those filter groups, where you can actually go in and specify anyone on VLAN 3 or on this 1096.1 subnet gets those DNS filtering rules or does not. So that's where those groups actually come in. Makes sense?
Yes. I'm sorry, I was blinded by the cryptic VLAN 3 there.
I know, right? And the best part is it's actually VLAN 7. Yeah. So just to add a layer of humor on top of that. Yeah.
Okay.
But you can go in and then from there, anytime that you're moving around. So let's say, for instance, you're creating new SSIDs, because like we mentioned, you can attach access points to the gateway as many as you need. And the SSIDs will pull down their configuration from the cloud as well. You can do so. Let's call it VLAN 3 SSID because I am very creative with a password of the one password you're not supposed to use. And then click save, and that'll automatically create a new SSID that'll then broadcast from any access points plugged in. And you'll see if I go back to overview, I can see that VLAN 3 SSID there.
All right. So we should probably let people know that you can get access points
<There's>
that are branded up-level systems that will work pretty much automatically with the system as you get it, right?
Exactly. So you can plug in any up-level access point to a gateway. It'll automatically configure up. So you'll notice here I have one plugged into port 8, and it'll pull down any SSIDs that are configured in the dashboard automatically. So you can plug in as many as you need or just one, and it'll automatically pull down those configurations. And then anyone walking along in the office, as they're moving from access point to access point, if there are multiple, they'll automatically hand off to one another.
Okay, so instant roaming.
Yeah, exactly. And they will broadcast the same SSIDs across a single access point, and then you can go in and configure those access points here by changing the transmitting power, doing all kinds of stuff, changing the channels that they're on, for instance, right? If you're having Wi-Fi interference issues, so on and so forth.
All right. Now, I did not hook up your access points because I use my own. I probably shouldn't say that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But how in-depth can you get looking at access points? For instance, can you see all of the clients that connect, which access points they connect to, all of that good, lovely
information? Yeah, great question. So you can absolutely see any devices that are connected to the network, whether they be on access points or physically connected to the device. Unfortunately, I don't have any connected to the access point at the moment. That would be demo 101 very bad if I had this computer connected up to it. But for instance, this particular device is on port 6, so I can see that connection here. If it were plugged into or connected up to an SSID instead, you would see the SSID name and the access point name as well. Let's see if I have any others that were previously on. Nope, none there. So I might.
So as you're looking, I will say that under the devices tab, one of the things that I've liked that I have another device for, but using your device, it will show past devices that connected to the appliance and when they were last seen, what port they were on, and the MAC address. So yeah, just right there, like you said. So that information stays in the system. I've only had it for a month, so I should probably ask you, how long does that information stay if somebody connects and then doesn't come back?
Yeah, it actually stays until you clear it out. Okay. So you'll notice here, if you click on those three dots, there's a forget this device option or forget all offline devices. So that would allow you to clear any ancient devices out. But you can see here, again, connected to a physical port. But if it were an access point, you would see all that information here. And this device was seen on the 19th, so a handful of days ago. You can see that.
Okay.
What the manufacturer was.
Now, annoying question. So you've got 8 ports on the up-level appliance. Obviously, you can't put 100 people in those 8 points. So if we're doing, you know, switch stacking and we're, you know, plugging switches into those ports, how far down can you dive?
Yeah. So if it's an up-level switch, you'll actually see all of those ports appear here, just like the 8 ports on the gateway. So if, for instance, you have a 48-port switch or a 22-port switch, you would see all 30 ports in total, or 56, right? You would see all those ports, and you can see, again, which device is on what port. So it'll go all the way down to the switch level, even if those switches are daisy-chained. You'll see which individual port the device is on. Now, if it's an unmanaged switch or not an up-level switch, we obviously can't tell. But we can tell you which port it's on of the up-level specifically.
Okay. But if you stay within the up-level brand, you actually have not just the appliance, but you've got switches, you've got the access points, so you can create an entire stack just from up-level.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
How many different switches do you have?
Say that again?
How many different switches do you have?
So we currently have an 8 and a 24-port switch. We're coming out with a 48-port switch this year, so that'll actually be here in a couple of months.
All right, and those are fully cloud-managed?
Fully cloud managed. Like I said, all of the ports on the switch will configure up the exact same way and pull down their configuration from the cloud again. And you'll be able to manage them here the exact same way that you do the 8 ports on the gateway. So for instance, I can move them among VLANs. If it's an 8-port switch or a 22-port switch, I can move them amongst VLANs here, click save, and then it'll automatically push down that configuration of the new VLAN to the port switch port.
All right.
So you'll see that here.
All right. Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. All of that good stuff. So some other things, we briefly went over those groups. But another grouping option is actually going to be the domain, or it's called directory here, but it's a domain controller that's built into the gateway. So like you mentioned, this can scale both up and down for clients as you need, which is really important. It allows MSPs to get customers into the sales cycle much sooner, begin to manage them with a piece of equipment. Like I said, it's all subscription-based, so the hardware is built into the cost of the subscription on a monthly basis. And then from there, they can go in and enable or disable any services that they need as they grow over time. And then obviously that changes the subscription level, but the important thing is it's all built into the gateway. So all those services are always enabled or available, and then you can enable them and disable them as you need. So a domain controller is obviously a very big one. Where you can come in and create a new domain here. So this will allow you to set the domain name and the DNS. So let's say, for instance, I want it to be domain. I'm very clever, I know. .uplevel.local, click save. You'll select which site you want that domain controller to be at. And then it'll go in and provision a new domain controller on the gateway. It does take about 10 minutes, both to push down that configuration from the cloud to the gateway itself, but also for the gateway to get things squared up, make sure all the configurations are right, go through its processes. So you'll see that there. But at any time, I can come in and create new usernames and passwords. If, for instance, if I want to come in and create user, at some point, I'll get much better at these.
Well, the next time we do this, you'll be all prepared.
Yeah. Oh, so I actually like doing this live. But at some point, I'll find a better thing to call it other than user one and VLAN 3. But you'll come in and select first name, last name, username, obviously is the important part, and then give it a password and click save. You can do this for as many users as you want. And you guessed it, I'm going with user two. And all of that great info here. Number two.
Now, as she's typing, I will say, folks, that I was a bit impatient when I was setting up my directory services, where I did not wait for the full completion. So the initial setup, you said, takes about 10 minutes when you first activate the domain services. And then any changes that you make after that will take a few minutes as well.
Yeah, it takes a few minutes just for any changes in the gateway to push down from the cloud, for it to pull those new changes. So it does take a couple of minutes, especially when you're talking about like SSIDs. The access point has to reconfigure with those new SSIDs. So it takes a couple of minutes. That's true with the domain controller as well. But the largest thing is the time it takes to actually provision the gateway, with the new domain. But like I said, it's very simple to do. All you have to do is set the domain name of the domain controller and click save. And from there, we'll take care of everything else as far as policies go and setting up the domain initially.
All right.
Yeah. So at any point, I can come into these directory settings and change the password security. I can come in, set the lock number of failed attempts. I can go in, set expirations for passwords, all of that good stuff. I can delete the domain. Be very careful. That's not it's not something we ever recommend, but you can do so as well if you're playing around with it and testing it out.
I did that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can. If you want to delete the domain, you absolutely can, but just know you can't get it back. So there's not an undo button for deleting a domain controller there. But once it pushes down that initial configuration, it'll also push down those usernames and passwords. And then you can come in and create new new machines that can attach the domain. So my MacBook is called Robin's MVP, I believe is what it is. And I'll click save. For that DNS name of the machine itself, and that'll allow it to authenticate up to the domain controller, be a part of the domain. The good thing to note about this is it's actually OS agnostic. It doesn't matter about the operating system, so I can attach my Mac to the domain controller. Same with iPhones and iPads. The really important thing about the domain controller that we've built into the gateway is the fact that you can actually implement this without the use of CALs. Client access licenses. So it dramatically reduces the cost of implementing an Active Directory domain controller. It is Windows 7 and Windows 10 compatible. It works very, very similar to a domain controller by Active Directory. And you connect up the exact same way. But it means that MSPs can actually start to manage more and more client devices on the network without having to ask for additional dollars as far as CALs go. Does that make sense? Let me know if I'm talking too much.
Nope, go ahead.
Yeah. So like I said, you can add as many DNS names as you need there and then map specific drives. So this will pull all of the storage drives that are already on the gateway. And I haven't talked about the fact that there's a built-in NAS in the gateway. It can either be a 1 or 5 tera NAS. And you can map those drives to any letters you need. And then click save. And if I go back to users, I can now map those drives to those specific users. So for instance, if I want this user one to have access to accounting and maybe share and click save, I can do so. And then maybe user two gets access to Alexis and share and click save, I can do so. And then anytime that user one logs in, regardless of machine that they're logged into, as long as it's a part of the domain, they'll automatically get those map drives mapped to the machine and they'll see their background, which is important, right? It looks like they've never left. And if they try to access any drives that they don't have access to, they'll be denied.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. We had something pop up here. Did you test Forcit? Bob, I'm not sure I understand the question. Can you elaborate a little bit? We'll keep going.
Okay. And then under the audit tab, you obviously have a full auditing log of everyone that's logged in, logged out, all the different drives that they're accessing, folders that they're accessing, all of that good info. There's nothing here yet because there's no domain created, right? We've still got another couple of minutes, 4 to be exact.
Okay. So Bob explained, Forcit is a program that moves computers to a domain.
Migration tool. We actually haven't. I haven't tested that one specifically, and I don't believe we've tested it. But we can absolutely add it to the list of migration tools to test. Yeah. We are looking to implement, a CVS import option as well to help reduce the configuration times additionally.
All right.
Yeah. Any other questions? If you might have another question.
No, he's just saying it's great for moving a computer.
Oh, okay. Got it. sorry, there are things flashing. I assume they're questions. Yeah.
Yes, folks, we're live, so this is how it's going.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the domain controller. And it's really, like I said, intended to help reduce the deployment times, right? It's very easy. You can do it remotely and pull all that information in beforehand. And then either implement it very quickly as far as the time that's required to be on site with a customer, or ship it off to a customer and configure it, you know, remotely. We actually, not with Active Directory, but we actually had an MSP who had an entire system that he configured up while it was on the UPS truck. And then he drop shipped it to his customer in Hawaii. And he is in Oregon, right? So he sent it off, said, okay, call me when it gets there. I'll walk you through how to set it up. And they entirely remotely set up the entire device without having to actually do a truck roll all the way to Hawaii, which, as you can imagine, is fairly costly.
It's a little more than a truck roll.
Yeah, exactly. A flight roll. Yeah, having to fly all the way out there. But him not having to fly all the way out to Hawaii, though I bet he would have wanted to, you know, saved a lot of money for that small business. And they were able to do everything remotely. And then as soon as the gateway was powered on, everything pulled down. Takes a few minutes to pull down those configurations, but once you do, you're up and running, which is really important.
Okay. I want to move on to make sure we have enough time to talk about SD-WAN, but is there anything major in directory services that we need to bring up?
No, I think we've kind of gone over a good amount of it. Obviously, the major thing is having to do with the cost reduction of CALs.
Okay.
Right.
And before we jump over, another question popped up here. How many VPN connections does the uplevel support?
Yeah, it supports up to 200, and it can actually go further than that. But it's primarily, especially when you're talking about a 100-person business, you're usually talking about the ISP speeds. The limiting factor on that is obviously going to be, as far as the throughput goes, the up and down bandwidths of both the client that's accessing the VPN and the up and down speeds of the uplevel gateway itself, what ISP link it's connected to. So we're often talking about the internet connections rather than the number of concurrent sessions.
Okay. So now we want to talk about something that I'm very interested in, because I have a customer with 7 locations that we're doing SD-WAN in. They're not happy with their ISP provider who is managing their SD-WAN. So tell us about SD-WAN.
Yeah. So the Uplevel Gateway has, actually, let me get back over to the other one. The Uplevel Gateway has 2 options. You can either dual WAN failover. So anytime the ISP goes down, failover to the secondary ISP. We do so with what we call fast failover. So we do it incredibly quickly in a matter of 2 seconds. We'll fail over, which is important when you're talking about phone calls. So I don't know about your specific case, but, you know, phone calls typically come up in this, any sort of VoIP phone system where if it fails over, it'll drop the call. And because we have fast failover, and specifically with, Freedom Voice, who we've just partnered with, we can actually maintain the phone calls up, even though it fails over. All you do is miss a couple of seconds of audio there. So you can do that. There's also a load balancing option here where you can actually aggregate the 2 links together. We will go in and continuously monitor both up and download jitter and drop packets and latency, all of that good stuff, to intelligently aggregate the 2 together and then push traffic out accordingly. And then on top of that, we will actually QoS both links to intelligently manage the voice calls for QoS purposes, and then also the VPN connections. So most importantly, none of this requires a static IP, either on either side.
Okay.
So what's going on with your 7 site customer?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Oh, I do.
No, it's just something where their prices have gone up. They've had some stability issues, even with the SD-WAN, they've been dropping. So,
oh, really?
And it's interesting because they've got a fiber connection and then a backup broadband connection. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to operate in active-passive mode, but we've had to put them in active-active mode in order to keep things up and running. So similar to your load balance. But the one thing we're looking at is, you know, they've got these fiber connections that they want to have most of the traffic run over the fiber. So there's not a way to, you know, because load balance for most means it's just going to pick and choose. Mm-hmm. Whereas they want a solution where, well, how can we put the primary bulk of the traffic on the fiber, still have the active-active, and make sure that, you know, there's enough on both sides if something happens?
Yeah, so that's actually an interesting point. We actually allow you to decipher in a perfect scenario. So let's take all things equal, right? Jitter, drop, latency, all of that good stuff is 100% equal. How much traffic gets sent on either link? You can actually come in and specify the upload and download links here of each, the primary and the secondary. If all things are equal, we'll then proportion out appropriately those 2 links. So for instance, in a 100-100 case where the ISP links are equal, then 50% of the traffic would go over the primary, 50% would go over the secondary. Now, this is a user-entered value. We'll actually, in an event, let's say that you would like to specify to use one link over the other, you can go in and manually change these to proportion it out however you would like. So let's say, for instance, this is the primary internet connection and you want all of the traffic to go over the primary. You can give it a bit of padding to force it to go over that. Now, granted, we're still taking into account all the jitter, all of the latency, and all the drop packets there. So in the event that this primary link has a high number of drop packets, we're all of a sudden going to start proportioning things out the secondary more heavily, right? It'll no longer be a 50-50 split, but you can add padding in that to allow for a kind of user-entered value to proportion out how you would like to see it in an ideal setting.
Okay.
So I say that because you wouldn't ever want to put a secondary as the LTE connection. Let's say you would like a secondary connection, You wouldn't want to do this with LTE,
right?
Because there is an event that we would actually start sending 100% of the traffic over the LTE, and then all of a sudden you have a very bad bill 1 month. That's not good. But for multiple ISPs, this is absolutely an option.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm looking at a question in the chat, and we'll come back to that because it takes us off of this. All right, so true SD-WAN, dual WAN configuration. Looks nice.
Yeah. It's very easy to set up, which is the important part. And like I said, let's say, for instance, you have two internet connections and something starts happening with this primary here. You can actually go in and at any point enable load balancing. So even if this is an LTE connection, let's say, for instance, the primary is just abysmal. It's not working. They want to go ahead and use the secondary link. You can always go in and add that load balancing there at any point.
Okay. And then this is one of those things where in the diagnostics, you can actually set an alert to be sent if there is issues.
So in the dashboard itself, you can actually get alerts if the primary ever goes down, if the secondary ever goes down, as they fail over between the two. That's actually done up in notifications. If I can move the screen around. If you go into settings up here and notifications, that is one of the failures and alerts that gets sent out automatically.
Okay.
Anytime a failure happens.
Yeah. Okay. And so the question was, any plans to add a static configuration page under IP and DNS? So if a customer goes to a static from dynamic IP, you can do so without having to make a site visit.
Oh, as in a WAN? Yeah, funny that you mention it. It is something that we're looking at. Right now, it is the one and only thing that cannot be done from the dashboards. We are looking at actually implementing that into the dashboard. I don't have a timeline, though, so I can't answer exactly when. That has been in talk.
Okay. All right. And I want to make sure, and we're going to go over the hour, so let's just...
That's okay.
Let's just say it. But I want to go back. So you said that you have a partner with Freedom Voice. So most people that have listened to this podcast know Freedom Voice because we've had them on the show. I started using them for voice over IP service. They were the first company that I selected. So tell us about this partnership with Freedom Voice.
Yeah. So first of all, we love Freedom Voice. They're a fantastic phone vendor, and it's been great to work with them. So we're really excited about the partnership. But us partnering with them actually allows us to do a couple of things. In troubleshooting, whenever you have companies that partner together, you actually get much better troubleshooting of issues, right? So anytime that not we ever anticipate issues, but we've partnered with them to ensure that partners using both us and them actually can go in and easily troubleshoot issues because we have access to the back end and then they obviously have access to their servers and we can directly work one-on-one together to troubleshoot any issues. It's really important for combining vendors like that because as most MSPs know, most often it goes like this, right? Someone says it's their fault, the other person says it's their fault and no resolution ever comes together. But us partnering with Freedom Voice allows us to actually have visibility into what they're seeing and vice versa. And like I said, with the fast failover, we can actually ensure that we'll keep their phone calls up in the event that the primary link goes down and we fail over to that secondary link there.
Okay. So when did that happen? Because I don't know how I missed that. Don't think there was a big announcement or anything. When did that happen?
Yeah. So we announced it probably about mid-January, I want to say. So about a month and a half ago, there have been some things that have been happening since then. So it's understandable that it kind of got overlooked, but we'll continue to come out with additional stuff. We're actually going to do a webinar with them early April to showcase kind of what we're up to together and dive a little deeper into it. So that'll be okay. Exciting.
All right. So it just kind of shocked me. You said that. I'm like, wait a minute. I know them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're really, really excited about it. Freedom Voice is, like I said, a fantastic company. They've been great to work with. And it opens a lot of doors for our partners, like I said, to troubleshooting issues.
Okay.
quickly resolving things.
All right. Just to let listeners know that that wasn't a paid endorsement because I didn't
it's
know.
It's not.
I did not know. all right. So back to the demo here. What have we missed that I sidetracked you on?
Yeah. So I'm sure there are a bunch of things that I've missed, but the first that comes to mind is the site-to-site VPN. So this is going to be a site-to-site VPN between any up-level gateways tied under the same customer. So for instance, if I go back for a second, you'll notice this Robin Tech Systems, again with these names, has three office locations. Yeah, creativity. I'll work on it. So anytime you have multiple sites under a single customer, you can come in and enable or disable site-to-site VPN with a single click of a button. Really important.
Okay, wait, did you just... All you did was click the button?
Yeah.
Okay. And but what did you configure by clicking the button?
Yeah. So what you're doing is tying those LANs together. So I'm going in and tying this employee's VLAN together across all three sites. So it means that anyone connected to the employee's VLAN at the Robin apartment here will have access to the employee's VLAN at Tom's desk, at Daisy Chained Gateway Robin, right? All of these different office locations pushes all those VLANs together. So anyone can access any resource at any other office location with a single click of a button. There's no additional firewall rules required, no site-to-site, no static IPs required under any circumstance. So with literally a single click of a button, you can come in and enable site-to-site VPN.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It is quite literally that easy.
Okay.
We do everything on the back end.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, for instance, we have customers, we have one customer with over 22 sites, I think it is, across the entire Northeast, stretching from, I think, Massachusetts all the way down to Florida, huge physical footprint. And so configuring site-to-site VPNs is huge for them. They obviously need access to all the different resources at all the different office locations. And the MSP actually goes in, configures the system remotely, and then whenever they plug it in, click site-to-site VPN on, and they have access across the entire thing.
So, question. Mm-hmm. So, the times that I've done the VPNs, most of the time it's for remote access to a server or something like that. Very often it's to connect a network share across the VPN. Mm-hmm. So, how does that work in terms of you're connecting the site-to-site VPN? Can users in one group see shared drives from another appliance across the VPN?
Yeah, they can see shared drives. I mean, it is literally like they're on the same LAN. It's literally like they're in the office. So it's not just resources on the up-level gateway that they can see, but it is all devices that are within the same group. They can see across those VLANs, or I'm sorry, across the sites. Yeah. One thing that I haven't talked about is the fact that some of these VLANs actually have built-in firewall rules. So for instance, this boss VLAN here actually has a firewall rule preventing any access into it from the employee's network. It is an admin group, so it automatically has a one-way firewall rule into any VLAN, but those VLANs cannot see into it. And those actually carry over on the site-to-site VPN as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So it is literally like you're, physically going in and connecting the entire state of Oklahoma to a single LAN. Pinging the whole nine.
Okay. All right. I'm just popping back into my dashboard to see. I've asked most of my questions. And I think that was it, except for the fact that my impatience in the directory services, we've duly noted.
That's okay. we understand. So creating the domain is the one thing that takes time.
Oh, the site settings. So there are security audit logs.
Yeah. So you can pull any logs that you would like. It'll download it, so I'm not going to. But it'll download all of the VAR logs as well as all of the dashboard logs. So you can see which of your techs made which configuration changes and when.
Okay.
Yeah. In addition to all of the VAR logs that are sitting on the gateway, if you care to go through the VAR logging.
Okay. And one more thing from the chat here. I have a customer that has cameras / DVR on site connected to the... So did you like fill this with an up-level deal here? Because this person has the cameras and DVR on site connected to up-level.
And this isn't a case that I'm aware of, so okay. No.
I created a rule forward 80. Mm-hmm. So port 80, 60362192.168.0.105, and it works, but I get some weird alerts at threat analysis tab.
Ah, interesting. So the threat analysis is inspecting inbound and outbound traffic for malicious content. It may be that opening that port forwarding rule is triggering an attack profile. Not uncommon. It can happen. It isn't necessarily malicious if you note the source IP address. Now, if that source IP address isn't something that you're expecting, I would double check it. But you can always come in and specify if you ever punch a hole through the firewall. You can always specify the incoming ports via either single IP address, subnets, or DNS names as you need, all separated by commas here. So if the IPS IDS is actually alerting on some bad traffic, you can always.
But you could also, as part of that threat analysis, you can just simply click on the rule to allow it and not worry about it because you know what it is.
Yeah, exactly. You can accept that specific attack moving forward if it's blocking if it's triggering the same rule over and over again. And same goes for that IP address. If you deem the IP address bad, you can go in and block it as well.
Okay. All right. So what we have not done is talk about the fact that you said that this is MSP only, so customers can't go to your site and research pricing and things of that nature. But for people that want to look at this and, you know, get more information, is it something where they have to sign up to be a partner first, or how much information can they get without actually doing something?
So like you mentioned, we don't put any of our pricing online so that customers can't ever see it. So if you Google up level pricing, you get nada. You can request to be a partner. We will give you pricing before you actually sign the partnership agreement, so you know what you're signing up for. And if you want any additional information, you can always go to uplevelsystems.com. That's our normal website. And then if you go to /partners, that's obviously the partnership page where you can get more information about the Uplevel partnership. We will give you pricing beforehand. We do verify that you're an MSP beforehand. So make sure to put in your actual, company website. If you put in a small business website, we will most often not give you access to pricing. So just give us your real website. That'll be cool. But we will give you pricing beforehand, as well as all the partnership agreement information, all of the perks that come along with it, kind of what we do for our partners, so on and so forth. We do a lot of marketing efforts on behalf of our partners, including co-branded collateral to help with prospecting new customers, new small businesses as you need. As well as cold calling lists and lead generation and all kinds of stuff for our partners. So you can get more information about us there.
Okay. And obviously I'll have the link in the show note to the partners page, but you can actually get a lot of the documentation and resources without even contacting you. It's all right there on the partner page.
Yeah, you can get a ton of information just on our website alone. Obviously about the product and what all it does, as well as some of the partnership stuff. But again, pricing not in there. So if you want pricing, you've got to come and contact us.
Okay. And even a 75-word company description for end users.
Yeah, just in case you would like to see what end users are saying.
Okay. All right. So, Robin, thank you very much. That was a lot.
Yeah, that was. Like I mentioned, the Gateway has a ton of different services, but the important thing is, depending on the specific customer needs and or budget, you can always go in and enable or disable any of those services as you need, over time or as they grow. So there's a lot here, but don't be intimidated. It's all good.
Okay. And, all right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for attending this live podcasts and demo with Robin Livesay and Uplevel Systems. I'm going to go ahead and end off the live show on the Facebook, and we've got a couple more questions in the Zoom chat, so I will try to stay on and we'll get those answered, but this is going to do it for the podcast. And again, head over to podnuts.com and check on the show notes. And this video will be rebroadcast on the YouTube at some point when I get it up there. So be looking for that. And thank you very much for watching. And until next time, holla.
Thanks, guys. Sorry about that dog in the background. Oh, that didn't
well, at least he waited until after the...
Yeah, that was a...